This show is part of the Goblin Broadcast Network, mate. You probably knew that, though.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 29. I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D news and review podcast, and in this episode, I will be finding a path with James Jacobs. Welcome again to episode 29 of The Tome, James Jacobs. In this episode, I conducted a little interview with James Jacobs, a employee over at Paizo Publishing, formerly editor of Dungeon Magazine, and now editor of the Pathfinder line, which is a natural fit for somebody who's been working in Dungeon lately. He and I chit-chatted about his job and his background and what he's all about, and it was a really good time. This is the last of my summer interviews. This is the last one that I did over my summer break away from school. And so after this, you can probably expect there to be quite a bit of time before you see a lot more interviews again. I've got a few sort of lined up in the works, so you might see a few here and there, but this is likely the last interview you're going to see in a while. Also, I've got in the works some 4th edition news and a little episode dealing with a few different issues and some advice and that kind of thing with some contributions from regular Tome reporters and from our friends over at Gamers Haven and possibly more. We'll see what I can pull off. I'm sneaking up on the 1-year anniversary of the show, and I'm sort of thinking up some ideas and some plans on what to do for that. But if you've got some ideas, please shoot me an email or hop on over to the forums. While you're at the forums, you can also check out the 4th edition news section. I am regularly updating the various bits of news as I find it. I'm only talking about news that I can confirm. And of course, since it is about an edition that hasn't come out yet, any of it is subject to change. But it's all stuff that I will also talk about in the 4th edition news episode that will be coming up. But this is just for people who want to get a quick preview. Well, without further ado, I'm going to give you the interview with James Jacobs. I'm going to try once again to find a good spot in the midst of the interview to take a break and give you a quick promo just to break up the segment a little bit. Let me know if you like that or not. Again, email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com or hop on over to the forums. Go to www.thetomeshow.com. Without further ado, here's the interview with James Jacobs.
This is Jeff Greiner, the Tome host, and today I'm talking to James Jacobs, Paizo Publishing Editor-in-Chief of Dungeon and the upcoming Pathfinder products. James, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Going great. My traditional first question for interviewees, I guess, is how did you first get into playing Dungeons & Dragons?
That would be way back in, 1980, 81. I was in fifth grade, and my teacher basically, it was like a rainy day, and he divided the class up. It was a pretty small school, so we had like maybe 25 people in our class. He divided us up into like groups of 4 and 5 and basically ran us through a dungeon using the old blue box. And he'd do one encounter per lunch session or per lunch break or whatever, and then we wouldn't be able to continue until everybody had or somebody in the group had written that session up as a little short story. So it was basically a pretty sneaky way to trick fifth graders into writing.
You bet. an interesting little exercise. I'm a teacher by trade myself, and I don't know that I would easily get away with spending a lot of my time gaming like that in class.
Yeah, it was really effective, and it was fun, and it was actually back in like 1980 when the game was really still building its momentum, and there hadn't really been much of like this cultural backlash and stuff against it yet.
Sure.
But it was, and after that, I just kind of like it stuck. And ever since, that's where it started.
Very cool. And so how did you go from being an avid D&D player into somebody who's writing for the game?
Back when Dragon first had their, I think it was issue 111, had a advertisement basically for the upcoming Dungeon magazine, and they said that we're going to be doing adventures in this other magazine, bi-monthly magazine. We're going to need lots of adventures to start sending them in, and that sounded like a good idea to me, so I started sending in adventure proposals and all that, and I got some encouraging rejection letters back from Roger Moore and then Barbara, and that was pretty exciting just to see that at the other end of the whole process that there were people that were taking the time to make right-hand written responses and stuff to who was at the time. I was 14 years old, and I eventually got one of them through the gates, Scepter of the Underworld, back in Dungeon 12, and it was like a choose-your-own-adventure-style solo adventure. And that was the first thing I got published way, way back then, and I got a couple others published over the next several years, and eventually moved up into the Seattle region after finishing college. And after a couple more years of like working temp agencies, kind of ended up working at Wizards of the Coast. And from there, it was like you were inside the bubble. And it was, as long as you were interested in writing for D&D and all that, because everybody was there, and it was really easy to just keep bugging them for stuff to write in the magazine and all that.
Sure. So you started out in Dungeon, and you seem to have come home to your roots in that sort of way lately, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of fun because, I remember when Dungeon first came out and just really being impressed by it. It was like all these adventures for a super cheap price, really. And so it was really kind of exciting about 4 or 5 years ago to finally get a job here and working as the then lowly associate editor and working my way up.
Very cool. Now, you've also worked on some pretty other incredible products in your days. I know I've personally enjoyed, like, the Fiendish Codex book, Races of Faerun, and Lords of Madness. Were all three of those are really great books that I've enjoyed. Do you have plans to get more into writing books like that?
Well, to a certain extent, a lot of the stuff that we're doing at Paizo is we're moving away from the magazine format and into book-type mm-hmm. products, mostly soft covers, but we're probably going to be doing hardcovers now and then, like we did with the Dragon Companion and the Shackled City hardcover, but not, compiling stuff from the magazines, new stuff. So I will probably be working on some of those products. And we're still on good terms with everybody over at Wizards of the Coast, and a lot of the guys over there are friends and everything. So once everything kind of gets back to normal for me and I'm no longer doing like two jobs at once, I'll probably start pestering them for freelance too. So I certainly intend to keep working on gaming products and books and stuff.
Great. And you mentioned that a lot of what Paizo has planned is book lines sort of in the soft cover vein. Is that in an effort to try to make them more affordable? Because I know like Wizards of the Coast has had a lot of, they've focused almost entirely on hardcovers in the last several years, and you see the prices getting pretty high as a result, I think.
Yeah, hardcovers do sell a lot better than the soft covers, and that's just kind of the way the market works. Mm-hmm. For us doing soft cover products, it's basically a matter of size. Something like Pathfinder is 96 pages long, and putting a hardcover on that is kind of weird. It's not really big enough to justify the... It's like the covers would be as thick as the book itself. So,
sure.
For now, we're mostly focusing on like the Game Mastery Adventures and all those, which those are 32 pages. So, Soft cover is just a more practical choice, really.
Sure. Now, in your history of writing, I looked through some of the things that you've worked on, and you've written a lot of monster books, whether they're monster manuals or books that focus on specific types of monsters and that kind of thing. Should this mean that I can imply that you're sort of a crunch guy when it comes to writing?
I see myself as a flavor guy, but mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff that I write does end up being monsters. Monsters are my favorite part of the game, really.
Sure.
And I think that's just because growing up, I had a steady diet of like the old creature features, late night monster movie shows, and they just seem to me the most interesting part of the game. And if you're designing monsters, there's a certain part of that which is like just coming up with like what they look like and what their ecology is. But the main thing is grinding out monsters' stats. So
mm-hmm.
I have, and that combined with just working on Dungeon for the past 4 years, kind of by default makes you into a crunch guy. So
sure. you're a fluff guy, a flavor guy who's been thrown into a crunch world then.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess that sounds right.
So since you're so big into monsters, what's your favorite one at the moment? What's the monster that you're really digging right now?
I think my favorite is still pretty much the frog hemoth.
Just
like the combination of like this absurd frog monster combined with a dinosaur and then tentacles. I've always been really intrigued by demons, and I've mentioned in a couple of editorials for Dungeon just that they have a lot of hit points, and they're just like the baddest of the bad monsters, so...
very cool.
All the demons are just, I don't know, I'm kind of obsessed with them.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of the demons and devils and Ugaloths and all that, all through my D&D experience, I guess. They're very cool.
It's also, not only are they really powerful, but they're just so, you know, varied. One will look like a two-headed baboon, and the other is like some just normal guy with six fingers, and
mm-hmm.
they're just so different that you never really know what you're gonna get next time you find a, you know, like find a new one or whatever.
You bet. Now I'm told that some people have taken to calling you Doctor.
Oh yeah.
What's that about?
That I believe, as far as I can tell, started with Matt Cernett. When I first started working at Paizo, I was already friends with Matt, and he noticed that every third story I had about my childhood or growing up or whatever seemed to somehow involve a different animal. And the reason for that is that growing up, I was grew up in Northern California in the middle of the Redwoods and middle of nowhere. I had high school was, I think, 120 kids in all, so it was a really low population area. And
mm-hmm.
So we just had a lot of animals growing up, from like a cow to a horse to dogs and cats, and I kept snakes and lizards and all sorts of just crazy, just the entire range of like the animal kingdom was involved in the Jacobs family household growing up. And at one point, I basically just rattled off all of the different pets we'd had between my sisters and I over the years, and Matt decided then and there that I was like Dr. Doolittle and started calling me Dr. Jacobs. And I think Wes Schneider and Mike McCarter heard that, and they kind of latched onto it. So it doesn't really have anything to do with actual...
Hmm? It's been with you ever since.
Yeah, it's pretty much stuck.
Very cool. I know I've been talking to some people that hang out a lot on the Paizo boards, and the name runs around there, too.
Yeah, it's starting to spread slowly but surely. It's a little amusing, but...
Eventually, you'll have to start putting Doctor on the covers of the books that you're on in or in quotes.
As long as I don't end up having to go back to school for another 10 years or whatever, I'm
right.
Okay with that.
So let's talk a little bit about Dungeon now for a little bit.
All right.
You've been with the magazine through some of the best issues that I can recall. How has it been working for the magazine?
What's that experience
been like?
It's been like a combination of just really exciting and stressful. When I first came on, the magazines were, I think, probably at a pretty low point. There was a lot of, you know, just growing pains with Paizo, because I started working here about a year after the company started up, was spun off of Wizards of the Coast. And it's the magazine business is really cutthroat. And it's you kind of have to do everything that you can to stay ahead of the pack or make money and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of different, like the subscriber section and merging Polyhedron and Dungeon together. A lot of, you know, just experiments. Some of them didn't work. Those didn't particularly work. Other ones like the Adventure Path that Chris Thompson came up with turned out to basically be like magazine savers. So it was, in the first year, it was kind of stressful just trying to make sure that, you know, everybody who we paid attention to the message boards and our readers and letters and email, and just trying to please everybody it was a tough trick, but I think we pulled it off.
And with the magazine shortly ending its current format, are there going to be opportunities for you personally to be involved in the new digital format?
I believe so. I'm not going to be doing any of the editing or any of like the development or anything like that. I would love to keep. I love writing adventures, so I'm not quite 100% sure what their plans are for the new digital initiative and all that. But I have been speaking with them over there, and we'll be doing something with them, writing some stuff. I don't know if they have announced exactly what's going on, but it'll be some familiar columns.
Okay. And with Paizo's reign over Dungeon coming to an end soon, can you tease us with any of the things that we can look forward to in the last couple of issues?
Of Dungeon?
Yeah.
Sure. The last couple issues, the main thing is the Savage Tide Adventure Path has come into a close.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last few installments of that adventure path, we're kind of like pulling out all the stops and just pulling in all sorts of just big NPCs and monsters and events from throughout D&D's history. We've got Igwilv on the cover of Dungeon 149, and she ends up not necessarily being a villain, but sort of a dangerous ally to the party as you're going around navigating the abyss and the lower planes. And then in the last one, we've got this. It's pretty crazy. It's like when I talk, Greg Vaughn is the one who wrote the last Savage Tide Adventure, and one of my bits of advice for him writing it was to watch the Saving Private Ryan and basically write an adventure set on the abyss that incorporated a lot of elements from that movie. And he did a great job. It's pretty insane. Beyond the Savage Tide, we've got another adventure set in Sasserine. We've got a return to the old Red Box adventure where you go down into the dungeon and fight Bargle. We've updated that one and expanded it for third edition. We've got Nicholas Logue did a sequel to his really popular Eberron adventure, Chimes at Midnight. So that one's kind of a cross between like Silence of the Lambs and all sorts of other just creepy murder mystery movies. And the other big thing in the last issue Dungeon is we've got, as far as I can tell, it's as complete as I could make it, index of every issue from 1 to 150. And
wow,
that's spread out over, I think, 10 or 12 pages, and I'm not sure how we got it to all fit in that short of a space, but it's got adventures and maps of mystery and campaign workbooks and critical threats and all pretty much everything, just all compiled up, broken down by level so that if you're looking for, you've got a fifth level party and you don't know really what kind of, you know, you want to say run a Dragonlance adventure for a fifth level party, you just go to that section and presto, there you go.
And are you planning on having some compilations so that people can easily find all that stuff, all the various articles and that kind of stuff?
At this point, there's nothing like that on the schedule. Hopefully, we'll be doing some sort of licensed products with Wizards of the Coast and all that, but the actual ownership of Dungeon & Dragon is pretty much going right back to WotC.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I think that would be a pretty, pretty hot seller, you know, compilation-type products. The Dragon Compendium has been a great seller for us. So it's certainly a possibility, and I'd love to help work on something like that.
Hi-ho! It's your favorite amphibious reporter with a helpful intranet tip. Listening to the Geek Acres podcast can make you a well-rounded, hip, and fascinating individual. Go now to geekacres.libsyn.com. That's geekacres.libsyn.com. Your friends will be green with envy.
This is James Jacobs, author of Lords of Madness and Phoenix Codex 1 and the upcoming Expedition to the Ruins of Greyhawk, and you are listening to The Tome.
Now, there's been a lot of rumor and conspiracy, I guess, sort of involving Paizo's loss of the dungeon license that you just brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any insight as to the motives that led to this that the public may not be aware of?
Not really. I mean, it wasn't really that Wizards of the Coast revoked the license. It was actually set, the license was set to end, I believe, with the March or April issues of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually extended the license out to September so that we'd be able to finish off the Savage Heart of Intrapath as we'd originally intended to do the whole arc. It's disheartening to see the magazines going from print to electronic format, or however that whole transition is going to work out. But the whole time, just the relationship between Paizo and Wizards of the Coast has been respectful. It's been friendly. They understand that this is a really important, you know, legacy of the game, and.
Mm-hmm.
I can't exactly say why they decided to go with the decision they did, because I don't work there. I don't know all of the process that led up to it. But,
sure.
You see it throughout pretty much every medium that the world is, you know, evolving into a more electronic format. So it remains to be seen if now is the right time to switch over to a electronic format for magazines across the board or what, but... It was certainly not, there was no real conspiracies or anything like that. No
sure.
Twisting of mustaches.
Now, one of the most successful things that Dungeon has ever done and that I've seen is the development of these large adventure paths like you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
With Dungeon heading back to WotC, Paizo has announced a new product called Pathfinder that sort of fills in that role. Can you talk a little bit about what Pathfinder is?
Looking back at Dungeon, yeah, you're right. We realized that the thing that we'd been the most successful with in Dungeon is far and away the adventure paths. And again, those were originally Chris Thomason's idea, and then Eric and I kind of took the reins from him once he went over to work at Wizards of the Coast and early in the cycle for Shackled City. It's a constantly evolving learning process. We learned a lot during Shackled City that we applied to Age of Worms, and then a lot in Age of Worms that we applied to Savage Tide. And it just seems that the campaign model, an entire campaign in a box, as it were, is just something that a lot of DMs just don't have the time to build entire campaigns. And I think it's just addressing a need that really hadn't been out there at the time. So for Pathfinder, the theory is to continue, you know, working on adventure paths. It's what I think that we do, one of the things we do best at Paizo. We've got all of the artists and authors and everybody already, you know, in the train of thought of building giant adventure paths like this, and so it just seemed like a natural evolution. With Pathfinder, we're moving away from a magazine format. It's still something that comes out every month, but it's got high quality paper, full color, it's a lot sturdier and is going to remain, you know, it's going to stand the test of time of traveling around backpacks and game tables all over the place. Mm-hmm. One of the things with the magazines and why we really wanted to do a compilation for Shackled City was that you run the adventure once and the magazines basically fall apart because they're not, you know, that solidly put together. And furthermore, magazines are kind of a temporary publication as it is. They're not really designed to be on the shelves more than a month at a time. So once the next magazine comes in, the previous one pretty much goes away, and you can still get it sometimes like from publishers or like eBay or other like used bookstores. But for the most part, once a magazine goes out of print, it's gone forever and ever. So by putting them into a book format, books get reprinted, so we can keep that going as long as the demand is there for it. By switching Pathfinder into the book format, we can basically just keep it going as long as people are interested. So hopefully that'll be for a while.
And even though it's going to a book format, you're still selling it on a subscription basis at the same time, right?
Yes, it's kind of a hybrid product in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a book. It's got a thick but still soft cover. The Venture Red Hand of Doom is the one that we've been talking about, the closest approximation as to what a Pathfinder is going to look and feel like. But it is something that's coming out every month, and it is a serialized adventure. If you get number one, and number two is very dependent on number one and all the way up through. So it just makes sense to do it as a subscription format. And we had a lot of the tools and resources to do subscriptions and that type of service. So it seemed like a natural way to follow through. There's, I guess, in Asia, Japan, and I think maybe Europe, there's kind of a market developing for similar types of products, like not magazines, but not books. I think they call them MOOCs or something like that. But just this kind of, it's like a high-quality periodical. And it certainly, it costs more, but it's just a lot thicker, a lot sturdier. There's not, you know, the ads. There's no ads in these, so you basically get everything you pay for. In a standard issue of Dungeon, I think we were able to do basically a 30-page adventure was as most the biggest we could get. And with Pathfinder, a 50-page adventure is pretty much average and on the low end of things.
Okay.
So there's just a lot more room and such in the book format than with the magazine.
You get a lot more content than you were with the adventure paths.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And each one, in addition to, like, for example, in Pathfinder, in addition to an adventure in each volume, we've got just support articles. You've seen some of them in Dungeon already, like backdrops on cities and such like that. But we're expanding into like doing core belief style presentations of some of the deities and ecology style formats for some of the monsters that feature prominently. Basically, everything you'll need to not only run the adventure, but to expand the adventure, because that's one of the big joys of being a DM is building it and expanding things out to make it your own.
And you've sort of developed the adventures that you go through the Pathfinder series are going to slowly develop a new campaign setting, right?
Yes. The set, and this is like in Pathfinder and in the Game Mastery modules that we're doing, they're all set in the same D&D style world. We haven't released much information about that world itself, and for the most part we're going to be releasing that information in the format of Adventures, a lot like how Greyhawk was primarily developed by Adventures back in first edition. If an adventure, say, has a lot of information, and in one of the upcoming ones, we've got ogres as one of the primary villains, and we're taking that opportunity in Pathfinder to basically just show everything we need to show about how ogres work in this world.
Has there been some consideration of putting out other supplements, I guess, for the campaign setting separately?
Yes. Again, we're eventually going to hopefully get a campaign product, gazetteer type thing, out. I think they announced that at Origins that they're going to release the first gazetteer type product, I think early next year. But
okay.
Those will be, basically, they'll be compiled from information that has first appeared in the Adventures and in Pathfinder and then brought together and added to. As not only to fill out the world so that you can see where everything goes and all that, but also as a kind of a guide for people that we will end up having writing the adventures for us, we'll be able to send them to these gazetteer products, and they'll be able to have, you know, somewhere to reference.
Right. I know that seems like it'd be a big advantage to me personally, because if I'm going to make a character for this adventure, it's hard to make a character if I don't know much about the cultures and the religions and the areas.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's one of the things for Pathfinder. We're going to be doing a player's guide for each adventure path series that we do. And those will have, they'll be 16 pages long, and they'll kind of have just in a very condensed format tell you about like how all the races and classes and religions and everything intermix in the world, and basically gives you everything you need to know to make a character that fits into the new setting.
Sure. Now, are those being offered as a free web enhancement, or how is that being?
If you subscribe to, if there's like all these different options, it's hard to keep track of them all, but I think the way it works is if you subscribe to Pathfinder, you'll get a PDF of Pathfinder as free, basically. Mm-hmm. And then I think if you subscribe early enough, you get a copy of the Player's Guide as a bonus. Parties should just head on over to PyZone. It's got all sorts of different options for them. But at the very least, I do know that the Player's Guide will be for sale for $2 at bookstores and online at our store. And pretty much wherever Pathfinder sold, you'll be able to pick up the Player's Guide for pretty cheap.
Okay, yeah, I suppose you want to make that fairly cheap because not everybody needs to buy the whole adventure just to play in the adventure. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
You bet. And you mentioned that the storyline is very serialized sort of and connected. So
yes.
This isn't the kind of thing where you're going to be really interested in book 3 of the current Pathfinder series and pick that up but not pick up the stuff around it.
Yeah, that's the idea. One of the things when we were working on Shackled City, I mean, at that point we hadn't done much in a serialized adventure format, so we were a little timid in having the adventures rely too much on one of another. And then there was a little bit of that at the start of Age of Worms as well, but reader feedback was almost unanimously. People wanted the links in there. They wanted to have strong ties between adventures and all that. And with Savage Tide, we pretty much did that. And the response has been pretty strong. But at the same point, we're going to be doing 2 adventure paths a year in Pathfinder, and that's basically printing more than I think most game groups will be able to play.
Right.
So at one point, we're going to have these adventures that are just linked strongly together. But at the same point, we do realize that some customers are going to want to just buy, you know, Pathfinder 3 or Pathfinder 5 or something like that. We're trying to make, while the adventures themselves are tied together, we're trying to make sure that there are key sections in each adventure that you can pull out and run on their own. Like in Pathfinder 2, Haunted House plays a really strong role. And you can just run the Haunted House section of the adventure on its own as a 4th, 5th level adventure. At the same time, the other material, the ecologies and city backdrops and all that, are there to support the adventure, but if you're just picking up 1 or 2 copies of Pathfinder here and there, those will be self-contained enough that you don't have to rely on other volumes. But for the most part, yeah, it's going to be pretty tightly integrated together.
Yeah, because I know some people have been concerned that if everything is so tightly tied together and they don't, you know, they either have to buy into all of it or not buy any of it. And if you buy all of it, it does get a little bit pricey because you don't have the the ad support that you had in the magazines and that kind of
right.
stuff.
It's new territory for us too. So I mean, it's an evolving process. We are always listening to our customers and adjusting things as they go. I mean, if it turns out that people want less of less of the serialized nature, and we can certainly adjust things at that point. But until the first few Pathfinders come out, it's unclear as to how it's all going to pan out. It's at this point looking really positive, though, so that's good news.
Great. So Pathfinder seems very interesting, and I know that you have some incredibly talented people working on it, and I wish you luck on it.
Well, thanks.
What are some other things that you're personally working on that's coming up that we can look forward to?
Right now, I've been working mostly on getting Pathfinder off the ground. So for the last several months, that's more or less been pretty much everything I've been doing. I did, of course, coming out here in, I guess, about a month or less, is the Expedition to the Ruins of Greyhawk, which I wrote a little bit more than a third of, with Eric Mona and Jason Bowman picking up the other two-thirds.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen I haven't seen the final product yet, but I've seen the color final PDFs and all that, and it's looking pretty neat. We managed to, it shocks me how much Greyhawk Easter eggs and lore and tidbit we managed to cram into that that adventure. But that one's all done. Another one that's coming up later in the year is Elder Evils, which I wrote a chapter for, and that's all on my end done as well. I haven't seen really much. I don't think they've got a laid out version of that to show off to the authors yet, but so that should be pretty interesting later in the year. Apart from that, I've pretty much been 24/7 working on Pathfinder and Dungeons, so there will be a gap of James Jacobs authored products there for a bit, unless you're looking at Pathfinder.
Sure.
Once
that's enough to keep you keep any normal man pretty busy. So.
Oh yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, what sort of projects would you like to be working on in the future?
I've always been a huge fan of Lovecraft. I would love to do some sort of Call of Cthulhu type adventure or something that incorporates Lovecraft type elements into it. We're doing a little bit of that in Pathfinder. Wolf Bauer is also a huge fan of the Lovecraftian stuff, and so are pretty much all of the authors we got working on it. So you can expect to see some of those influences creeping into Pathfinder now and then. But one of the things I've always wanted to do, I just really admire how like the Chaosium's Call of Cthulhu products have always managed to capture the feel of Lovecraft's writings, and the player handouts and all of that stuff is just so fun to play. It just would be great to do a product like that.
So other than that, what games are you playing or running right now?
Right now, aside from the Call of Cthulhu one, which in theory happens once a month, but it's been more like once a season on Sundays, I run every other Saturday. I'm running the Savage Tide campaign, actually, for a bunch of my friends. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty fun because, you know, it's fun to actually be able to play the game that you're working on and sure. Just see, you know, things that you never thought of come up and play, because player characters are always coming up with weird ideas. I'm also playing in a couple of other campaigns. In Eric Mona's campaign, he's running Age of Worms right now. And Jason Bullman has been running an Eberron campaign that I've been playing in. But that's pretty much it for recently, for currently. When I first started working at Paizo, I think I was in maybe 8 different games at once. And that kind of, there was not enough time in the day or in the week to do that much. But alas, 4 will have to do for now.
Well, that's I think more gaming than most people get them in at any given time. So you're still doing
fair enough.
You bet. And I'm surprised to hear that you're doing a lot of your gaming in the adventure paths. Some of the other game designers and authors that I've talked to talk about generally trying to avoid the same genre that they're currently working on, just to avoid burnout. So that's
yep.
An interesting approach.
Burnout is, I mean, that's certainly, it's like one of these lurking fears that, you know,
mm-hmm.
once, because it's a big part of working in the industry is you just have to have a passion for doing it, you know, for writing this stuff and editing and all that. But I think at the same point, actually playing the games that you work on, whether it be running a campaign like me running Savage Tide or just playing an adventure or two in a D&D style adventure, I think is really important, because it's one thing to, you know, design the game, but the actual play of the game is just as important to, you know, to know about. And if you don't play the game, you can't really write for it, I don't think.
Sure. That's very cool. So are you going to be making it to any cons this year that people can find you at?
I will be at Gen Con, and we're going to have our, of course, booth. We've got several seminars and stuff set up. So people can certainly catch up to me at Gen Con. I'll be there the whole time. That's, I think, the only one that I'm scheduled to go to. I might be at PAX, which happens a little bit after Gen Con.
Okay.
But that one's kind of convenient because it's like right across the street practically from us, or right across the lake or
sure.
whatever. But for the most part, we don't really the attendance for cons from Paizo is especially recently, and we just are got so many things going, so many projects running at the same time that, you know, attending a week at a convention means that 5 or 6 products ends up being a week late. So
sure.
It's kind of a balancing act, but
yeah.
Certainly Gen Con.
And when you make it to the cons, are you usually working, or do you get any playtime in there too?
It The last several that I've been to, it's pretty much solid working. And that's mostly because there's just a lot, you know, going on and all that. This time, I think we're going to be running some demos of Pathfinder Adventures and the most recent Game Mastery module, Seven Swords of Sin, we'll be doing stuff for at the booth. So that'll be fun to actually get time to play that. Last year, I think, it was last year, I ran a sneak preview of the first adventure in Savage Tide for several of the authors that we work with. So that was pretty exciting too. But
cool.
For the most part, it's I'd say probably 75% work, 25% play, and then you try to sneak sleep in there somewhere, I guess.
Sure. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners?
Just to check out Pathfinder and the Game Mastery Adventures when you see them on the shelf or whatever. I mean, it's one thing to tell people about everything that we're doing, but it's really picking it up and looking at it is the best way to see what it is that we're going to be doing. So, if you've been a fan of Dragon and Dungeon, the same content by the same people and the same artists and everything is going to be continuing on in the modules and in Pathfinder. So check it out.
Very cool. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. It's been very interesting.
All right. Thank you very much, too.
Yeah. And in fact, the Tome currently has plans to have regular coverage of the Pathfinder books as they come out. So I look forward to seeing how all that pans out and what those stories are like.
Great.
And I know I'll be keeping a close eye out for more products with your name on it.
Cool. Sounds good.
And thanks again for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And there's the interview with James Jacobs. That was a lot of fun to do, and he was incredibly approachable, incredibly nice. Really makes me want to reach out to Paizo Publishing more in the future. And so I think I'm going to keep in contact with some of those guys and keep in touch with what they're up to. Maybe you can expect to see some more Paizo guys showing up in the future on the show. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. One of the best ways is to participate. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com, or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, or leave an audio, or just call the Tome hotline at 206-888-6126. That's 206-888-6126, and I'm still waiting for somebody to figure out if that spells anything fun. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Most of these can be found on the website at www.thetomeshow. Also, don't forget to check out our partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, at www.fistfulofcomics.com, and Gamers Haven at canadiancrusaders.com. This has been episode 29, James Jacobs of
The Tome.